All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuckists? How's that one? It doesn't matter. What the fucking ears? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. It's called WTF. Most of you know that, but I do know that we've got some new folks. It's odd. I think I will remain a discoverable thing for my entire life. I mean, that's just the nature of the game now. But I hope you enjoyed that Simpsons episode. I don't know if I've really talked to you since then, have I? Because last week's shows were pre-recorded and it was on last Sunday. So no, I watched it. I was pretty excited about it. I thought it was funny. I thought I came off like I am, which is good. It was an exciting thing to be part of. But my point is that a lot of people watch that and they're like, is this a real thing? Is this a real guy? Should I know about this guy? And welcome to you if this is like your second or third time listening to the show. Also, seems like the Mandy Moore episode was very popular and there might be some new people from that. Welcome to you and welcome to people that just randomly came here and this is your first time. I hope it works out for you. Let me try to explain what I do here. I will have a guest on a little later. That guest today is Andrea Savage. Her show, I'm Sorry, is brutally funny. She's great. I love her. I think she's hilarious. And I didn't know anything about her. I knew we ran in similar circles. She's been around the comedy world. She's done a lot of very funny stuff on a lot of different shows. But I watched all of the I'm Sorry's, and it's a lot. She operates at an intensity. Her funny comes at an intensity that is definitely, yeah, hey, right in your face there. And it's good. I told her that. I hope it didn't come off as insulting. So we'll be talking to her in a few. That show is on, where is it on? It's on True TV Wednesday nights. And it actually does it at 10 p.m. Eastern. The season finale airs March 6th. And I was about to say when I interrupted myself, which to you new people, occasionally I will interrupt conversations that I'm having in order to say what I want to say in the conversation. So prepare yourself for that. It seems like some people new to the show and even some people who've been around a while seem to think that that is some sort of liability on behalf of the interviewer. But don't look at me as an interviewer. We're having a conversation here and that's how I talk. Okay? Not a rationalization, just a reality. But I like that I'm Sorry is episodic in the old school way where you got to wait a week to see the next one. It's good. It's good to have that week. This binge-watching thing is going to exhaust everybody, and no one's going to be able to keep up with anything. And no matter the whole model, I think, is flawed, to be quite honest with you. Like, binge-watching is like when you make shows. Like, I'm about to finish up shooting on Glow, and they're going to drop all 10 of those babies whenever they drop them, and most people will watch them one after the other in a day or 2 days, and then it's done. Then you got to wait a year for almost all shows that drop it once, you got to wait a year for new ones. Right when you're about to forget they even existed. Hey, remember this? But it's sort of, I like the old timey way where it's like you look forward to the day it drops and you kind of make an event out of it or you make a point to watch it when it comes out. You don't have to do that with anything really, but it's nice to have the time and that also closes the gap between when you watched it and when the new ones are going to come. It's sort of like when you spend all day cooking Thanksgiving dinner and people just plow through it in 45 minutes or a half hour. It's like, okay, it's over. See you next year. That's not a great analogy, really, because you can't really do Thanksgiving dinner piece by piece, every week. Like, you can't, all right, here's the potatoes. It's going to be great next week when we do the stuffing. Then the week after that, we'll do the Brussels sprouts or sweet potatoes. I haven't decided, so that's exciting. And then, week 7, we'll get the turkey going. Yeah, not a great analogy, but you know what I'm saying. So listen, don't forget to send any questions that you have for our 1,000th episode. Anything you want to know about past episodes, past guests, things from my life, things from life in general, send your questions and comments or things you want me to know to WTFpod@gmail.com and put 1,000th episode question in the subject. Also, speaking of doing a show for 10 years, yeah, our buddy Kevin Pollak has been doing his show for that long, and this Saturday, March 2nd, he'll be taping his final episode of the Kevin Pollak Chat Show. It's a Dynasty Typewriter Theater. That's the same place I've been doing my recent shows in town. And his guests are Jim Jeffries and Pamela Adlon. That's this Saturday, March 2nd at 4 p.m. Go to dynastytypewriter.com for ticket info. And congratulations, Kevin Pollak. Good job and great job on Mrs. Maisel. And I love you. I love you, Jew. From one Jew to another. That's the only requirement that really, and most of being a Jew is relatively negotiable in terms of commitment, but you do have to say you're a Jew at least three times a week to somebody or just to the air. I'm a Jew, just walking down the street. That you have to do. It's important to identify. So I have to sort of shift here into some, you know, brutal news. So look, you know, I've been doing comedy a long time, and I'm at an age now. Obviously, it happens at every age, and sometimes it happens prematurely, and sometimes it happens in a horrible way, but, death happens. And a real singular, unique, funny man died last Thursday. I believe it was Thursday morning, maybe Wednesday night. Brody Stevens, who is a fixture on the comedy scene, certainly here in Los Angeles, and everybody kind of knows Brody. He was really a unique and energetic, and it was a force of nature, man. And he was always around. You know, I can remember Brody for, I don't know, at least 15, 20 years. I can't remember the first time I met him, but at the Comedy Store, he was always there. He did a later spot every night, and he sort of had his own world and his own intensity. And there was nobody really like Brody Stevens, and he is no longer with us. It was a tragic thing. He committed suicide. He fought a very public and aggressive battle with depression. He talked about it. He made people with depression know they weren't alone. He shared his struggles with depression in the rawest of ways. And last week he lost that fight, and he's definitely going to be missed. And it's heartbreaking. I was at the store, Comedy Store, on Saturday night. 2 days after the news broke, and it was just, it's like the place is now missing a fundamental part of its engine, you know? It was just, Brody was always around, and he was always emanating positive energy. Yeah, he was something else, man. Rest in peace, Brody. And thank you for everything that you gave the world, and thank you for helping people with the same struggle as you. No, they weren't alone. And no, you aren't alone. And know that, you don't necessarily have to make the choice that Brody made, but people make that choice. It's horrible. It's sad. It happens. And he's going to be missed. He was loved. And unfortunately, I never did a long-form interview with Brody. We had a short one we did years ago on a live podcast, but I don't think it really represents him. I feel like, if you don't know who I'm talking about and you want to see a truly unique individual, just there's nobody like him. There's plenty of output out there from Brody. His last special, I believe it was his last one, was Live from the Main Room at the Comedy Store. And he had some other specials, and he's done a lot of stuff with Zach Galifianakis, and he did a lot of Periscope stuff. He did a lot of stuff on Twitter. He did everything. Brody did everything. The last I remember he had a gig over at Midnight, the show that Hardwick hosted. He was the audience warm-up. He was great at that. And I saw him the Wednesday before he passed. And there's a very painful but very revealing and honest Periscope. His last Periscope piece that people have been watching is about 45 minutes of him really talking about the struggle. And it's just, it's a heartbreaking thing. And again, he was loved. He will be missed. He was an integral, I think is the word, part of the comedy community. Jesus, man, if you're fighting that thing, do everything you can to get help. You know, it's hard, man. You know, with trying to find the right medicines, deciding whether you should be on medicine, staying on the medicine, you know, doing therapy, doing everything. Man, you know, it's just, Brody was a real example of just really like day to day in the trenches with depression. But please get help, please. And the thing about depression and people who struggle with it, you know, I grew up with that, you know, my father did. And it's heavy, man. There's people I miss. There's definitely people I miss from my world that are no longer with us. And a lot of people think like, well, like, man, it seems like a lot of people are dying all of a sudden. It's like, no, a lot of people die every day. let's pull it around. I'll tell you one thing that didn't happen. Buster Keaton did not die. Buster Keaton lives. Buster Keaton is almost, actually, I'm going to say it, but you know, knock on wood, is back to fucking normal, folks. Yeah, I got him home, and I was giving him IVs every day, just sitting with him, holding him. He was very affectionate when he got out of the hospital. You know, he's vulnerable and sweet and, you know, more affectionate than I'd ever seen him. And it was so sweet, this little crazy kitten that I have that had renal failure for reasons we don't know. It didn't look good. Kidneys is a bad thing. You know, but I brought him in because he was pukey, and it turned out he was in the middle of renal failure and about to die, and I got him into the hospital. We got him on antibiotics. We got him on fluids. Wasn't looking good. The kidneys were inflamed. There was fluid in there from the ultrasound. We saw them. Well, not a lot of hope in the vet's voice. And then the next day, his numbers were good, better. And they said, take him home, you know, give him an IV every day, give him the new kidney food, and then check back in 10 days or a week and a half. So he started out so sweet and vulnerable. And then as he got his strength, he got a little more crazy. And then towards the end of me giving him the IV, he's eating more than he ever has. And he's like put on the weight back. He put the weight back on. And now he's this crazy fucking asshole self again. He's beating up on the old guys. LaFonda and Monkey had a brief reprieve. But it's funny. It's funny with cats, you know. When Buster wasn't around, the old guys, they're both about 15, were definitely relaxing. And now, you know, when Buster came back, I kept him quarantined for a few days so I could administer the food and inject him. And then I let him out, and then it took him a while. But like, because I had put him aside for a few days, you know, he didn't smell like the vet's office, so there was none of that. Who the fuck is this? They both knew who he was, and they both knew that trouble was back. But it's weird. LaFonda does not love it. She's an old lady, and she doesn't like being beat up on. And Monkey, you would think, doesn't love it, but it's weird because Monkey, he can't beat Buster, and Buster always, you know, plays too rough, and he's always like, you know, like it's always a little crazy. But, you know, you start to look like, you know, oh, Monkey kind of likes getting beat up by Buster. There's that moment where they're like, well, you still going to beat me up, pal? Come on, I'm still here to play. I'll keep trying to play with you, but I'm an old man. But let's do it. Let's take a spin. Let's go. So they're, you know, however much they missed him, I think they're pretty happy to have him back. So that's some good news, and I'll keep you abreast of that. Andrea Savage is here, and I gotta be honest, man. You never know what to expect, and I tend to, especially if I don't know somebody personally or, you know, I've only seen them here and there. Like, I watched all the shows, and I really got a kick out of it. It's a sweet show. It's very funny. It's nice and crass. Her personality is, you know, just sort of like, you know, aggressively funny. And it's great. It's a unique show. It's called I'm Sorry. It's on True TV. It's on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern. The season finale airs March 6th, but you can watch them all when you get a chance. And this is me talking. Two, did I call her aggressively funny? Is that, that's not meant to be bad. This is me and Andrea Savage. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. So what were you saying about me meeting you? Because I had this weird feeling, and I don't think I thought, like, why haven't I really seen her do stand up? How do I not know her? I'm not that much. Well, I'm older. I'm not going to tip anything. But I mean, like, it feels like we were in similar circles.
We should have known each other probably more than we did. And I think that's weird, too, because I'm like, we know a lot of the same people.
Right.
You were definitely ahead of, you know, you were older. But you, we met actually quite a few times, like the early 2000s, but you wouldn't remember. And I am not someone who is scared of people.
Yeah.
You seemed like an angry like I was somewhat scared of you. You were married to my friend. And so Mishna and I were friends.
Oh.
And so she and I did, started kind of stand up around the same time.
You did?
And we would perform sometimes the improv together and this and that, and you would come and you were just like, hi. And I was just like, who is this mean? I was just kind of a little scared.
What was she telling you?
She seemed happy, by the way. We weren't super close. Like, I wasn't as close where she'd be like, oof, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. What am I doing?
Get me out.
Your notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Read this at home.
Can I stay? Do you have a safe space I can stay?
Yeah. That was later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I was trying to think when I was driving over here, I was like, when was that? And I think it was around 2004.
Oh, okay.
2002 to 2004. Is that around the time?
Sure. That's when I moved out here, and that's when we moved out here. We were not married yet.
Yeah. I don't think you were. Yeah.
Right.
And we were dating.
We were living together.
Okay.
So she moved out here with me. So that was 2002, and we were living together.
Okay.
And you were part of that group.
Yeah.
So that was like, who was in that? There was who started out at that time? Because I know, like, I feel like Ornie Adams and people like.
Yeah, I didn't really know Ornie.
But
you know what?
You were in the alt crew.
I was kind of in the alt crew. Yeah. So, Natasha Leggero, Chelsea Handler, and I—we all kind of started at the same time.
Right.
And then they kind of kept doing stand up, and I kind of went more acting.
What happened with your stand up?
I honestly loved stand up. I started working. And couldn't work all day and write all day and then go out at night.
Well, let's go back.
All right.
I don't know you.
You don't.
And I've watched the show. Because you were supposed to come on.
Yeah.
Like, I knew about the show, but it's hard to watch things because you don't know what to watch. And
there's
then
too
like,
much.
There is.
Thank you for watching it. Anyway.
And I knew you were a funny person, and I saw you on Veep, and I think you're funny on that, and I've seen you in other things. I think you're funny. So I watched a show, and I binged it, as they say.
Okay, great.
And you're a lot. You're a lot to binge.
Yeah.
I think you need a little space. I think it's smart.
Okay. I mean, I feel like that's, I can't understand why I was a little scared of you. And off put, I can't imagine what that was.
No, but I think.
No. By the way, I get it.
I think it's interesting that you're on a network that actually drops them weekly. Which is a way to watch things. Because when you do watch things one after the other, I just did it with Escape from Dannemora, which is a different experience.
Yes.
But I felt.
Yeah.
But I felt dirty and awful.
Yeah.
Because I watched them all back to back. And when you're watching you back to back, you sort
it's
of get into your thing. And, you know, I'm.
Yeah. Although it's interesting. I think as a comedian, it's hard for me to watch a lot of comedy.
No,
like
I think you're very funny. I liked it.
But I mean, I get like, okay, that's a lot.
You're an intense person. You come in hot. All the time.
But
even when you walked into my house, I was like, wow, this is really how this is how she is.
But you know what? Yes and no, because I will say it's weird to drive across the city and then be like, oh, I'm going to this guy's house I don't know, mm-hmm. and we've really never met. We don't know anything in common. And then we're going to have this chat. Well, we do have, actually, we have a lot in common, but we don't know each other, you're like, whatever. And it is like, I was like, what a strange thing.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like when you walk, I felt like when I walked in, you have to sort of.
Sure.
Otherwise, it's like, oh, hello, I'm standing in your house. Oh,
yeah.
Can I use your bathroom?
You could have. Did you need to go to the bathroom?
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't.
Because I have one.
I don't have to go to the bathroom very often.
Never?
Never. I have a big bladder.
Really?
Yeah. Always have.
And you can hold. Are you one of those people that, like, if you have to pee, like, right when you go to sleep, that you can hold it all night?
All night long.
Oh.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's like that.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. I'm a man. I have to pee at least 2 or 3 times in the night. In the night.
Luckily, my husband does not do that.
Well, how old is he?
He's 40.
Oh, it's coming.
Okay. All right. It's fair. I had a girlfriend, not a romantic girlfriend, but a close friend, who, when she would come visit LA, she'd come stay at my house, and I had a one bedroom, whatever. Yeah. And so she'd share the bed with me, and she would go to the bathroom 6 times a night. Like,
really?
To the point where before we went to bed, I'd make her go to the bathroom like a child.
Yeah.
And then I put a limit. I was like, I can't have you getting up 6 times. Because I was like, you don't have, there's no way biologically you actually have to get up that often.
Yeah.
It's just in your head. So I give you 3 times. And then past that, you don't get up.
Does this end in a horrible way? Like she had a bladder infection or that she's no longer with us because she had a...
By the way... Would be a great story, but no.
Do you know her still?
Of course, yeah.
Your friends?
Yeah. Very close friend.
Oh.
Actually, on my show, Alison Tolman plays a version of her on my show.
Which one's, which?
Alison Tolman from Fargo. She plays one of my best friends who's getting divorced.
Oh, yeah. I don't know everyone's name.
Yeah,
I'm not as in the loop as I should be.
You're very busy, and it's
But like I, a lot of people to. Know a lot of people. Some people can hold it all in their brain. I can't hold it all in my brain, right?
I really can't. I've noticed a big difference. And I think part of it is just being so busy for and the past inundated. 2.5 years and inundated with information.
Voluntarily inundated with all this stuff.
I've noticed that my short-term just sort of like recollection
it's
of names
fucked.
Is going. Yeah, it's not great.
My short-term of everything is going. I can't remember. Like things that happened a week ago seem like it was last year.
I know.
Does that happen to you?
Yes. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. You're like, when did we do that? That was like 3 days ago. Oh, my God.
I know. Part of me finds that comforting because
like
I
time
feel
is
like time isn't rushing so fast.
Yeah. It's just trickling by.
It's just trickling by because sometimes I'll sit there and I go, oh, my God, it's 2019. Like I started season 2 in 2017.
Yeah.
What am I doing in this
That's
date?
When you shot you that's when
well,
you
that's
shot.
When I started writing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know it takes so long for things to go on.
Especially this kind of show.
That's why it's so good that you're doing it like you're dropping them week to week. So now people can't like you put all that work. It's like cooking an amazing meal and then like you eat compulsively.
Yeah.
You eat too fast and it's gone.
And it's gone.
Like this way, at least people have to take 10 weeks and then they only have to wait like 9 or 10 months.
More.
A year. The people have to wait literally a year or more.
Uh-huh.
If they binge it, they're fucked for a year. You're just like,
I know.
Do you remember how great it was to watch The Sopranos every week?
I didn't.
You weren't?
Never watched
how about
it.
Breaking Bad? Do you watch anything that was weekly where you'd look forward to it?
Yes, of course.
Like Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday night. Here we go.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
My God. Yes, of course.
How good was that?
Well, that's sort of what my show is, but I will say
it's
on True TV, which is a little harder for people to find. And then it finally went on Netflix in the fall.
Yeah.
And that's where...
That opened it up.
That's where everyone started watching
it.
So...
And people like it?
And people seem to like it.
Yeah, I had a show on
really
IFC.
Nice fans. I know.
And it went on to Netflix.
Yeah.
And still few people watch it.
Okay.
But they like it. The few people that walk in.
Okay. Well, great.
It's not about me. I'm happy you're successful.
You're doing fine.
I'm doing good.
Yeah, I feel good. You're doing good.
So,
okay.
Where'd you come from?
I'm from L.A.
Really?
Yeah. Born and raised.
Where? Like what part?
Born in like Santa Monica. And then mostly grew up in the valley.
In the valley? Like what? Like how far out?
Like far out, Woodland Hills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fancy?
No. Not super fancy. But not terrible. I mean, I didn't...
Right.
I grew up pretty... My childhood and background is not like exciting and angsty. Parents got divorced when I was 2.
Oh, see.
So that's where it... Yeah, that's where... There it is. Okay. There we go. Just
how,
get
do you
right
have siblings?
I do. I have 4 brothers.
4?
Yeah. I have 1 older brother from same parents, and then I have 3 younger brothers because both my parents got remarried.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are they in show business? Your parents?
Nobody in my entire, not one person. And all my family lives in LA. And by the way, my husband is one of five as well, and also grew up in LA. And his family's not in the entertainment business.
Is he in show business?
He is.
What's he do?
He's an agent.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But he's like a lovely, nice person.
See, now let's talk about this a minute.
And I've known him since high school. Side note. We haven't been together since high school, but I've known him since I was 15.
So he's a California kid too?
He is, yeah. He's from the Valley.
Well, I have found that, and I don't want to knock, you know, that part of the business, you know, because—
By the way—
We need him.
You need him, but also there's some not great ones.
Sure, well, there's not good people on everything.
Exactly.
But I have this weird thing where, like, I don't— Like, I've dealt with agents a bit throughout my life and executives and whatnot. I was relatively unrepresented for like a decade or so.
Yeah, yeah.
But every time I meet them, like I don't know if it's a projection or what, but they seem to be missing some part of their personality. Now, I'm not saying this about your husband. Like, I guess it's because you're dealing with when you're dealing with talent, and let's say you represent 10 people, you have to lie to them. You have to mislead them. You have to make them feel like everything's about to happen or that they tried their best when really you might not be doing anything. And that must be a difficult thing to do.
You know what? I also think, I mean, that makes it sound terrible and that they're all psychopaths.
They're not. Okay.
So because I came in with a lot of attitude because we knew each other in high school. And then I knew that he had gone off and done that. We didn't re-meet until our early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he works at a big agency.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's got to be the fucking worst.
Yeah.
And I was like, he'd reached out, whatever, and wanted to get together. And I was like, oh, fuck that. Like, I was like, he's got to be worst of the worst.
Jewish guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big Jew.
Yeah.
Big.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it big Jew?
Huge Jew.
Huge Jew.
So Jewy.
I mean, so Jewy. Yeah. No, but he's a Jew.
Yeah.
And then I met him.
Are you Jew?
Should be, but wasn't raised, but am.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly Jew?
Mostly Jew. A little Greek and mostly Jew.
That's a good combo.
Yeah.
Like so you kind of, like, you bring the shitty Jewish food up to the middle, meets the Greek food.
Meets
and
the Greek food.
It's
then you
good.
Great hummus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then we met, and I was like, oh, he seems nice, but I was re-met, and I was very skeptical for a while. I was like, where's the fake, shitty?
Where's the sociopathic necessity
of
your business?
Yeah, like lying and just sort of this, like, schmoozy play or whatever. Not there, but he's sort of known for being, like, the nicest agent. So he's,
He's
not awful.
Yeah, it's still sort of a mystery, you know, how it all works on their end.
You know what? It's interesting because I feel like now I know a little how the sausage is made.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, let's talk. Because I'm not going to interview a fucking agent. Oh,
no.
See, that tone was wrong. I'm not going to interview anyone from that part of the business
because it
doesn't necessarily interest me as much other than an investigation.
I actually think if you knew someone who was an agent who was not one of those weird, you actually would be like, wow, that's really interesting.
But aren't a lot of them odd? Let's be diplomatic.
Yeah.
Aren't a lot of them like—
I would say odd is like—
Am I making it all up?
No. I don't think you're making it all up. I would say odd, I'd rather they were odd because I feel like that's a little more interesting. Sometimes I find that I just am like, who are you?
Right.
Yeah. Like,
right.
I don't even know what your personality is.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just sort of this bland where you're like, I don't know what's real and what's not.
Right. Well, it's sort of, that's what I mean. They're missing a part of their personality. That's what—
But then now, because I'm around a lot of them, I'm like, and he's always been like, you're so mean, like, you're always so judgmental, whatever.
Yeah.
And I've now know quite a few great ones.
Right.
And now I will say with my agents, mm-hmm. I was with an agency for like 12 years. And then I left a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Which actually is a funny story of the final straw of why I left.
What is that?
I think you'll
what
actually
happened?
Appreciate this. I don't know if I've ever told this anywhere.
What?
So I was working quite a bit, but it was all like people I knew and this and that. And I think I was on Beep and I don't
already?
Know.
Already? So it's
and doing
recently?
Episodes. Yeah, this was like 2 years ago. And my show had been picked up. I was about to start season one. And it was like, I hadn't heard from my agents in a long time. And I was like, how come I don't ever get sent on auditions through them? And I actually really liked my agents as people over there. And they were really great. But it was like, something's wrong. I feel like you were just like, oh, well, she just does her, she creates her own stuff, so we don't have to worry about it. Whatever.
That's what they're dying for to happen.
Yes.
And then they can take credit for it.
Yeah, and kind of, you know, kind yeah. of. I don't know. Yeah. I don't even know if it's as nefarious as that. I think sometimes people have too many clients.
Are you saying I'm seeing evil where there's I feel like, just mundanity?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think you're giving too much credit.
It's the Hannah Arendt book, The Banality of Evil.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're honestly giving it way too much. Whatever. Okay. So I'd been like, well, maybe it's my reel. Like, maybe I need to update my reel. So I had just, I had done some stuff. And I had this movie that Alison Brie was in, Sleeping with Other People. And Jason Mantzoukas and I are a couple in it. We have whatever. And we have these funny improv scenes. He's a great guy. Good friend of mine. Yeah. And we work together a lot. And
he's on your show.
He's on my show.
Like every episode. So
He's on mostly. Half of them, the first season. And we've done move whatever and we're good friends.
So, no eggs for Jason.
No eggs. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I've been out to eat with that. Trust me, it's a whole fucking thing.
I know. I talked to
him. Yeah. No. It's
terrifying.
It's by the way.
He's terrified of eggs because it could kill him.
He carries an EpiPen. Like it's no joke. Yeah. It could kill him. Yeah. He's also the biggest hypochondriac.
Yeah.
In the world. Oh, germaphobe. Yeah? Whatever. And I love him, but I'm sure it's all connected because he could die at any moment. Yeah.
Just from licking egg. Yeah.
Of course, like, as comedians, you know, you want to, like, fuck with people, but you always have that thing of, like, what if I hid an egg in there? But, like, you never do it.
No,
but like, it's always like that, like, just to see, but also, like,
throat swell up
is it real? You know what I mean? Like, a little bit of, like...
How could someone be that allergic?
Maybe you grew out of it. Is this just sort of, you know... This is like some soothing mechanism of yours.
The prank gone wrong. Oh, shit, it is real. Call 911.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'll make sure the EpiPen's close and stab him with it.
So, you're making a reel.
So, I'm making a reel. And I was like, I'd love to get the scenes from Sleeping with Other People. It's really funny stuff of me and Mantzoukas. So, they get the scenes and... It was sort of like annoying for them to get this. Like they didn't do it when I got them and whatever. And then I was supposed to take a meeting there and I had just
at the agency.
Yeah. I'd just come back from shooting episodes and blah, blah, blah. And was going to take a meeting there at like 3 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock, I was like, let me look at what the updated reel is. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the scenes for Sleeping with Other People. And there was a scene with me and then a scene with me and then a scene of Amanda Pete.
Yeah.
And then a scene of me.
Yeah.
So there was a scene of a different actress on my reel.
Right.
Which led me to have some questions
of
whether or not they were aware that I was a different person from Amanda Pete. Like, clearly who had ever done that? She's also in the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they thought I was playing two different characters.
Right.
In the movie. I don't know what was happening.
So there's like just a chunk of Amanda Pete on
in
your
the
reel.
Middle of my reel.
With none of you.
And it had, no, it correct. Just... I'm not in that scene. it was like a scene that I'm in and then a scene that I'm not involved in at all.
So they just.
With in the middle of my reel. And so I also was like, well, how long has this been going? Because it had been like 4 months since that reel had been supposedly available.
Right. So they're just sending you out as Amanda Pete on the reel?
Or. Clearly you're not sending me out because wouldn't someone have been like,
it's not the same person.
That's not the same person. And so at that point I was like, I think that's the last straw. And,
right.
But also, you know, whatever. It makes me laugh because it's just, but it's also like, this was like 3 years ago and I've worked a long time. Like, okay, I guess we don't have to be in every scene on our reel, by the way. Why do we have to be in every scene on our reel? That you're right. You know what? I'm just realizing that maybe I was
being selfish.
Yeah, that she needs to. She's lovely.
Yeah,
I don't know her.
She's good,
but she's so talented.
Yeah,
that
I'm
sure her scene was good.
Yeah, and I hope she got work off your reel.
By the way, I think she must have
got some.
Yeah.
Well, that leads to the way
I don't even know why I went off on that tangent.
This is a funny story. The because you said
agents.
I have funny.
Oh, I'm married to an agent. Yeah, yeah. Because we're talking about agents.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, I don't think I was represented. I was in that situation before, you know, things turned around for me where my manager, and you start to realize how this works, that you're really just this, you're either a function, either they can sell you or they can't. Mm-hmm. And if they can't, you're just kind of like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, we got him too. So what happens is like I was unrepresented. Every few years, my manager would ask an agent to do him a favor and send me out a couple times to make it feel
like pocket you a little.
Yeah, right. And then just nothing would happen. And I'd have these calls where I'm like, do I have an agent? And then it got to, here's how my relationship, 20-year relationship with my manager ended. I brought the early episodes of the podcast in, which was starting to sort of pick up. You know, we were at the cutting, you know, the cusp of something. And I played him, and he, I go to meet him about it, and he goes, I don't get it. Where's, he goes, he said, where's the WTF? Where's the
what?
W, yeah, yeah. Like there, he had somehow played, this must mean this or that. Well, to his, we're okay now,
okay,
but
good.
I fired him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he tried to pawn me off onto the assistant, which is the worst, that is the worst moment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like there was this moment where like he's like, because I had shit on the assistant. I had a big fight with him because he lied to my face. I caught him in a lie and he just doubled down on the lie. And I'm like, dude, you're beat.
Yeah.
Right? And after that happened, my manager, after we make up, he goes, go apologize to Josh. They're all Josh. That was one of the funniest. Who said that? Greg Proop said he was at the Montreal Comedy Festival. He says, I'm in a room surrounded by Josh's and Barry's.
Oh, I so wish my husband's name was Josh.
What is it?
Jeremy.
Oh, there's
close.
But yeah, whatever. So that was that. But we're okay now. Everything's fine. I'm now with an agent who's he's sort of an old timer guy. Like he's been around a while, and I just like I don't know exactly who all my covering people are, but I know that he's I talk to him and he calls me.
As my husband always says, he goes literally like all you need is one person who really you don't need 1,000 people.
Yeah.
If you have one person who is paying attention and passionate and. Whatever. That's really all you
It's a weird part of the business.
It is a weird part.
Because I had another agent recently that I left and she was great and she was committed, but she was like not, you know, if the top people don't dig you, then you're going to be fighting against people in your own agency. It's like, I don't even like to think about it. But my question is this.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Because you're on the inside, you're fucking one.
Sometimes,
occasionally. Yeah. It's been a while, right? You have a kid. And you
it's all right.
Okay.
It's what, my show is based on a lot of real stuff, mostly real stuff.
Well, that guy's such a great guy.
Oh, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Your husband's that great a guy?
Honestly, I call him St. Jeremiah.
He's
he's the greatest guy in the whole fucking world. Everyone loves my fucking husband.
Hmm.
Which I talk about in season one, I think probably going back to my parents' divorce and all this stuff, I do have a legitimate, I always thought I'd be divorced and I sort of always imagined that would be great. And I don't know why, but I'm married to this like lovely person that is like, I'm happily married. So how am I supposed to get divorced? But I've always imagined I was going to be. So now what?
So it's on you to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure I am in some capacity, but anyway, okay, so what's
my
question?
Is that, like, you're working and you're doing well and you're obviously something they can market. When what happens that happened to you, when that happens, where they just, it's just they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It's like, what are they giving a shit about?
I don't
know. Is it like the book business where they've got one or two people that are making millions of dollars and that's all the effort goes into managing and making sure those people are all right? Or what? I just don't know. What are they? Are they just sitting around packaging things, whatever that means?
I think. I assume it's just them wrapping up presents to give each other.
Or ordering gift baskets for
gift packets, and they package them up, and then they send them out to different people around town.
I just don't know what the day-to-day is.
Well, I mean, I know what my husband's day-to-day is, but it's...
Phone calls
a lot. He represents bigger people.
Don't even talk to me about that number. Call me back.
That's what the Joshes do.
Oh, that's
the Joshes.
That's a Josh job, not a Jeremy job.
Jeremy,
But they are such an essential part of the business, and some of them have so much power, and it's just like I haven't quite wrapped my brain around, you know, how it all works. But it's so vast.
It is vast. Also, the other thing I realized, because people are always like, oh, your husband, you know, he represents these big people. Does he help you? And I'm like, no. He's literally in a different career than I am. We do not cross over.
I know. What is that about? Because, like, I was with a huge management agency, and he represented everybody, the biggest people in comedy. I'm like, can you just get me, like, a one-liner part where I just walk on in the thing? You guys produce it. You represent all the actors in it, and some of them are my friends. Is there any way?
Tell you, it sounds like maybe he didn't think you were great.
Mm. I think what I honestly think,
honestly, like, I mean,
I think he did. I think what it comes down to is I don't know what to do with him. See, yeah. They try to box you.
I would
you.
Say, but I think that is something interesting because I would say until you started, I would say in your past, what, decade?
Right,
because
like in 2004, you were scared of me. People had to be less scared of me because they just sort of assumed like he's got an edge.
Yeah.
And then they realized like he's very inconsistent. He's not always funny and he's scaring ladies. So maybe
we don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, we wait. We'll wait
but
it
don't
out.
You think, like, in a certain way, like, you had to figure out what to do with it the most?
Sure, I had to get...
And then guide it.
Well, yeah. Well, you early on, and I guess maybe this happened to you, you're driven by a certain amount of spite and entitlement. Like, you have talent. You may not have a handle on it, but you're like, why the fuck is that person getting that? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I go in for that? Why can't you send me in for that? If that person got... I don't know if I'm projecting, but it is
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, of course there is that natural...
But you might not have been ready is my point. Is that, like, I had a lot of opportunities that, in retrospect, I wasn't ready for, but I got.
Yeah.
And there was no way they could move forward, really, because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't grounded, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know what I really did.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think also I did stand up for a very short period of time, so I can't even call myself like a former stand up. I came in more through acting and that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, but what is the, because you seem like a relatively healthy person.
I think I am.
Mentally and...
Yeah, I think I am. I'm a pretty normal for doing what I do, like... normal person who has a pretty normal life.
So your parents get divorced.
So my parents get divorced.
But
yeah.
you it didn't devastate you because you were
too
young?
So I don't remember it.
And your mother, who were you living with?
My mom.
And
my mom had full custody. She met my stepdad
full
3
custody.
Weeks later.
What the hell did your dad do?
He wasn't interested. He had visitation.
Oh, okay.
I mean, back then it was like you just weren't interested. I didn't grow up
you
super.
You go over there, you went for the
go
weekend.
Go there 1 weekend every month, 2 months.
Are they both still around?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a relationship with both of them?
I do, yeah. My dad and I have had, you know, I wouldn't say a father dot, like what you'd think of. You know,
you kind of grew up together? He was around the corner kind of thing?
No, he lived in Orange County. Like it was kind of an hour and a half away. We'd meet at Union Station downtown.
Yeah.
And they'd do the drop off.
Uh-huh.
And my stepmom...
You have experience with Union Station. That was part of your childhood.
That was part of my childhood is driving to Union Station, not going inside, but... doing the exchange in the parking lot. Like, we wouldn't take the train. It was just sort of halfway between our houses.
Oh, really?
And then my
drive
dad...
drive downtown to beautiful old Union Station.
To beautiful old Union Station. And my stepmom, who actually is no longer my stepmom, but was my stepmom for many years. She is still alive, but they have gotten divorced. Never wanted to meet my mom. And so never met my mom in 30 years. And so she would get dropped off around the corner.
Yeah.
And then my dad would come pick us up and then go pick her up.
Oh, so it was weird.
So it was weird. And my dad, is an interesting guy. Like,
what's
I'm
he
still trying, he's an orthodontist.
Oh.
In Orange County.
Nice.
Yeah. I have a lot of teeth people in my family. We're people of teeth. And my brother's a dentist.
Is
my mom
he?
Was a dental hygienist.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. A periodontist. We're you know.
Teeth people.
We're teeth people.
Where do you stand on floss?
Pro.
Yeah. Good.
Very pro.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Compulsively.
Are people against floss?
I read one article.
I was like, I didn't know this was like a... I didn't know this was a brewing...
So I have a this woman who trains me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she finds things on the internet.
Yeah.
Because I floss. Like, my gums are kind of fucked. Because I have... It's a long story.
I'd love to hear every...
Well...
Actually, I'm kidding.
Well, my bite's off and...
Did you ever see it in gums?
I do, yeah. Because my bite's off and because of a bad decision I made early on with a toothbrush.
What was that? What does that mean?
I remember, like, I had to track it because, like, I've had these, you know, my gums, I want them to be healthy. But, like, one time when I was younger, I decided that, you know, to really brush thoroughly, you had to, you know, make your gums bleed.
Oh, Jesus.
So I just brushed.
Until
like,
your
my gums
bled every day?
A few times until, you know, and then it, yeah, I was misguided. And then I had braces and they took them off. They didn't work because my bite's off. And then they wanted to.
Well, whoa. Have you been wearing a retainer since? Have you been maintaining your bite?
No, what I'm saying is I had braces for 2 years and they straightened my teeth and I had retainers, but the orthodontist said basically, well, we have to reset your jaw in order for this to really work out because my jaw is off. So they would have had to break my jaw, realign it. And
you should have come to the Savages.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah, you should have come to the
stages. I was in New Mexico. There was no
it's
way to
worth
know.
It.
But then there was one orthodontist who we went in about my jaw, mm-hmm. and he showed us pictures of like Rondo Hatton and acromegaly, people that say I might be, my bones might be growing. Like, it was terrible. It was like they showed me.
Your face, I mean, I'm looking at your face right now. It doesn't look weird.
No, I know. I have a jaw, but I'm just telling you about my teeth and my gums.
All right,
you said dentist. And
I know, but I feel like now people would probably know what to do.
Yeah, but I'm not going to have my jaw reset at this point in time.
You got good teeth. I see. I mean,
they don't line up.
But they don't line up, but they're straight and they're nice.
Well, the braces work, but the bite's off, and that's why I can only, my teeth only meet in like two places, and it's hard to chew.
I've lost my headphones.
I'm not asking for advice, but the article, okay. Yeah, there was some floss. There was an idea that floss didn't do anything. I don't believe that.
No, I mean, that's a ridiculous argument.
Terrible.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, so
a lot of dentists.
Yeah,
and your mom, your stepmom is waiting around the corner.
So my stepmom's waiting around the corner. My mom met my stepdad 3 weeks after my dad left.
Oh, so you had a.
And then I think my dad 6 months later, he had like an early midlife crisis. It was the 70s, like mid 70s, you know, mid to late 70s, and was like, wait a minute, why did I have kids so young?
Oh,
I want to go on ski vacations, and you know.
So the Martin Mull character.
The Martin Mull character is a
kinda...
very that's all it's all so all not, those stories are real
not a volatile person but still sort of emotionally shitty
and I think Martin you know again my dad isn't like a shitty person or whatever but like a little focused on himself you know what I mean like
right
it was you know a different time
selfish
I would say
parent.
Martin is a very adorable version but my dad in the past like 8 years went through like this thing where he got divorced again and just started to party.
A second time or the third time? How many times?
This is the second time.
Okay.
So he had it in the mid 70s and then again in his 70s.
So he's in his 70s
and
he's starting to party?
He's in his 70s and it's waning right now, but he started partying.
Really?
Like clubbing.
In his 70s.
Mm-hmm. And drugs and.
So that's real in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
He had like everyone over for a family barbecue.
And he was on ecstasy.
And I had no idea.
This is a true story.
This is a true story. And he had a sensual photography wall that has just been taken down recently.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
So that's all true.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But it's so weird because I feel like. Season one is mostly all, you know, my stories and true stories. In season two, it starts to blend more with my writers and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like I had like the most normal childhood in so many ways. But now looking back, I'm like, well, maybe not, you know?
Well, it's weird with selfish parents because I had them too. It's like I really get the distinct feeling that my parents are more people I grew up with than parents. Like I don't have, like I would never, I would never go to either of them with a... like an emotional
problem.
Like I got to call my mommy.
Yeah.
I
have a fantastic mom
yeah.
who was the least selfish
What's
person.
What's the woman who plays your mom in the show?
Kathy Baker.
She's so funny.
She's so good.
Yeah, she's
and that
great.
Is very much my mother.
Oh,
and,
that's great.
Very much my mother. And I have a great mom. Like,
yeah.
She's, yeah. So basically, I mean, I grew up kind of just like going, all right, I got my mom.
And she's still
brothers.
Married to the stepfather?
No, he passed away.
Oh, sorry.
He passed away. But she's married to Leon. From the show, whom she feeds in bed.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Leon.
Yeah. She just randomly one day was like,
the
oh, I got to get home.
The guy in the show?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
But
she's got to get home too.
She's got to get home. And she was like, I got to leave by 3 o'clock because I got to feed Leon. I was like, you mean like make dinner? She was like, well, he likes to eat in bed. I was like, what are you saying? And I was like, I need you to walk me through every detail of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
What is Leon wearing?
Right.
What are you serving?
Right.
Is it just on the comforter? Are you pulling up a towel? She was like, well, we have white towels at the bottom of the bed ready. I was like, do they get washed and why are they white?
And he's not bedridden.
No, he comes home from work. She tells me he takes his pants off. And then he's in his tidy whities and t-shirt, gets in bed, watches TV, and my mom serves like a 3-course meal. And she was like, I don't know why you make this sound so weird. I was like, I don't know how else to make this sound. It's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
It's hard to
understand.
Then
she goes, I'm from a different generation.
The generation that just feeds their
perfectly. Yeah, the generation of slaves. I don't know what. I love when she says it. I'm always like, what generation is this that you're referring to? Like, we're the generation of just fucking crazy people.
Yeah. It is kind of.
Yeah.
The 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But your dad's okay? He's leveled off?
My dad is leveled off a little
bit.
Did
you? What was the confrontation, though, once he found out he was on ecstasy?
I didn't know. He didn't tell me. Uh-huh. He told my cousin, who then was like, hey, your dad's on ecstasy. And I was like, this was when my daughter was little.
Yeah.
And we would go there and there was like edibles everywhere and all the stuff. And I was like, don't eat chocolate at Grampy's house. I was like, ask before you eat anything. And I was just like, what is happening? And my husband and I had a thing where we don't stay after dark. I was like, I was like, once the sun goes down, we get out.
It might get weird.
It got weird. His girl, like, there's just a lot of stuff going on. We were like, we're just not. And then we'd get sort of heckled for not partying enough. And it was like,
from old people?
Mostly my dad.
Yeah.
And it was like, we're not interested in coming to your, driving to Orange County and like partying.
Doing X and
like,
hanging
out. What is happening? Yeah. So, but he's an interesting guy, you know.
He sounds like he got a pretty good sense of humor about it. I mean, isn't it upsetting on some level?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's probably the most complicated relationship of my life. But
the infantile father.
Yeah, just, you know, but he's fascinating and really interesting and really smart. But also, like, it just didn't seem like he was that interested in having. He had more kids later. Uh-huh. But like my older brother and I think he loves us. But like it wasn't. It never felt. We didn't have a room there. It never felt particularly.
Well, how many does he have other than you?
Two more.
And how are they?
They're great.
Yeah.
They're great. But they have a different relationship with him in a lot of ways. But they're awesome. And
but they still have to deal with him.
They still have to deal with. Yeah. They're. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But your mom was grounded and you had one good one. And you
I had a good one in my pocket. Yeah.
So are you doing funny stuff in theater and stuff in high school?
Yeah. Musical theater. I didn't come up like going, oh, I listen to cool comedy albums. I like,
no, but
liked Oklahoma and like.
You sing?
The Music Man. I did. Yeah. I don't sing anymore. I just haven't sung. It's not great. Uh-huh. But yeah, I feel like I was a decent singer, but I just forced my way into being a singer.
But it seems like you could do a musical now.
Like what?
But I mean, it seems like that's an option you should have, like maybe do a Broadway show.
Okay, well, I'm not going to. I'd love to do a Broadway show, but I don't.
You seem like you have there's part of you that has a musical personality.
Thank you.
Like, I think maybe, like, even if you did an episode of I'm Sorry that's musical. Just singing the whole time. Why wouldn't you do? I'm pitching now.
I know.
Not good? You're just going to let that go? Can you put it up on the whiteboard?
I'll put it on the whiteboard. We'll see. You know what I mean? I don't have anything left in me if we do season 3. So I'll put that on the whiteboard.
Yeah, musical episode.
Musical episode. Great. I'll call Rachel Bloom, who's fantastic.
She's great. Yeah.
We'll get her people. Yeah. And we'll do it.
Why not? I guess that's the problem now. You can't even do that because there's one show that does that well and it's unique. And if you did that, you're like, no, it's just the Rachel Bloom thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So you do musical theater.
So I do musical theater. I'm very academic. I'm a really, I
feel
a good
that.
Student.
Yeah, I feel.
I went to an all-girls school here in LA that's now co-ed.
Which one?
Harvard Westlake now.
And that was a Ivy League prep school in a way?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I did a lot of musical theater. I think that's when I realized, like, I knew I was starting to be funny.
Yeah.
But there weren't a lot of funny women. Like, it was not, there weren't a lot of girls at my school that were naturally super funny. But my guy friends were funny.
Yeah.
And my boyfriends were funny.
Yeah.
And
at school.
Outside of school because it was all girls school. But yeah. But I was like, I would never be an actor. I didn't even know being a comedian was a thing. I didn't really know I didn't know about Comedy World. I didn't know about improv groups. I didn't know what the Groundlings was. I didn't know any of that. And then I went to Cornell, which didn't have anything like that then.
That's a smart school.
Yeah.
Where's that, New York?
Upstate New York, Ithaca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what'd you study there?
I was pre-law. I was a government major. Yeah, with a minor in law.
So you understand everything.
I mean, this was a million years ago.
Right. But you were a good student.
I was a good student, yeah.
So you left, like, understanding government.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you did Veep, you're like, I
get this. Yeah. I was like, first of all, wrong. I just kept walking around this set, just going up to people. Okay, fine. I guess if you're not trying to make this authentic.
What stopped you from, like, pursuing law?
Well, because I was doing theater the whole time.
At Cornell.
At Cornell. just the theater department, but I wasn't in the theater department. And it was one of those things where I didn't want to admit it to myself, like, I think I want to try to do this. But coming from LA, being an actor, I was like, that's the most sort of irresponsible, lamest thing to do. It was not a cool thing in my world.
Right.
And
that's what people came to this city to do, and it was sort of sad somehow.
Yeah, or I just didn't even know anyone in it, and it just was sort
of
like... You
didn't know anyone in it?
I know, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I guess I knew, like, a little, like, I went to school with a couple people who were, like, actors, who were, like, kid actors.
Yeah, who?
Like, Tori Spelling went to my school.
Yeah.
And a couple other people.
Right.
And, but, like, I didn't really know. And anyway, so basically, I did study abroad, and I lived in Spain for 9 months.
You speak Spanish?
I do, yeah.
Yeah? Do you use it now?
Not as much as I'd like, but yeah.
That's
I like speaking Spanish.
Yeah, I wish I knew another language. You have
it's
a knack for it?
Now.
It is too late.
Yeah.
Even if I get the thing they advertise on TV, the Babbel or whatever.
I don't know what that is, but you're done. Don't even try.
I'm not gonna.
It's the worst attitude. Don't even try.
I couldn't handle it in college. I couldn't handle it in high school
or
college.
It's how I feel about an instrument. I never learned an instrument. I hate that. I wish I could play an instrument.
See,
but
I can
I'm like,
do that.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's too late for me.
Yeah, it is. Well, no, you could probably.
Save myself.
I mean, I don't know. It depends what you expect out of it. I mean, Spanish, like, if you're going to, you know, you can't really hobby Spanish. Like, you know, if you're going to
do
it.
You got to live somewhere, by the way.
But you got to talk to people. With a guitar, you can sit by yourself and play three chords shitty and still sing a song.
Yeah.
You know, I can't just, you know, sit around, you know, habla. I can, but.
That was pretty great. Just keep doing that. Keep, go down that road.
Habla.
Uh-huh.
No habla.
No.
No, I think you should. I'll tell you what. I'll try to pick up some Spanish, and you can
pick up
a guitar.
And I'll pick up some guitar?
Yeah.
All right, and then we'll meet up in like 6 months and see where
we'll
are.
We'll do this again, yeah.
By the way,
thrilled. Look at this. Look at this.
It'll be two middle-aged people.
You learn a Spanish song,
over.
And I'll sing it.
All right. I'll learn De Colores.
Okay. I used
you
to
know
play
that song?
Sure. De Colores,
son vistos los campos en la primavera. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to sing that in elementary school.
Yeah, we all did.
I grew up in
New
Mexico.
Mexico.
Right.
Yeah. You don't fuck. Yeah.
What? You don't fucking what?
No Spanish? New Mexico?
Yeah, I know. It was surrounded by it, but I crapped out in junior high and high school. I couldn't. There was something about the tenses. There's something about grammar that I barely have a handle on English.
I get it.
Like
Spanish
writing?
Is easier than English, though.
It is?
Yeah. It's just more. It's more straightforward.
It seemed like math to me, like to figure out grammar.
I like math, though.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
I can't.
But you know, I could never. It took living in Spain to speak it, mm-hmm. but I could understand it and that kind of stuff. But then it took living in Spain and like drinking,
mm-hmm.
like having some cocktails, and then suddenly you would be fluent.
What part of Spain?
Sevilla, southern Spain, Seville.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you drink that cider?
The sherry.
I was up in briefly in San Sebastian.
Okay. Yeah.
And they just have this hard cider.
I don't think that.
That's not
Spain is like one of those places. It's like if you're from the north, they hate you.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Like it's the most every place hates every other place.
Yeah. But you had a nice time there?
I had a great time. Love Spain.
And then you came back.
Then I came back and I was like, I'm going to be. Well, no, I was going to be an actor.
Yeah.
Not a comedian at all. It wasn't until I actually. So I told my like college counselor, I was like, well, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah.
And literally it was just like dead face. They didn't even know.
At Cornell?
At Cornell. And it was in the government department. They were just like, what are you saying? And then they were like, okay, well, after that, when do you think you're going to? I mean, really, it was just like, what?
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, I'll do this
when
for
you
like
fail,
a year. Yeah, when you fail. Or I don't is that even a thing you fail? Like, it was just literally like, I don't even know what words you're saying. So I'm just going to pretend you haven't said them.
Right.
And then I got a job on a kids show relatively early, relatively
quickly.
You came
back out here?
I came back out here, moved in
at home. And how did your mom and dad respond?
They were actually supportive. I think they were like, she'll do it for a year. It gives her like a little break. And then
they all hope it's a phase.
My dad was sending me law school and business school application deadlines for years and years and years. And then I got on this show called Sweet Valley High.
That's a kids show?
Yeah, it was like a tween show.
Yeah.
It was based on books called from Sweet Valley High. They were very popular, these girl twins, Jessica.
Yeah.
And Cynthia Wakefield.
Uh-huh.
And I played Brazilian exchange student.
Really?
Renata Vargas.
So you had to do an accent?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Well, that's not easy.
Well, except I was like, do you want an authentic Brazilian accent? They were like, nah, do what you did in the audition.
Yeah.
Which was offensive. And
but
didn't
kids.
Sound well, except it was like teen, but still. Mm-hmm. And I would have, I was from Brazil, but like I would talk about tacos and burros, but then also like Amazon rainforests.
Yeah.
And then also have fruit on my head.
So you're a stereotype.
It was a catch-all.
A general Latin-ish. Yeah.
I had a lot of, yeah, a lot of ruffles and a lot going on.
And you did a lot
of
these.
I did a season. Yeah, I did a season. That was our last season. I did a season of that. So and then I was the like, union? So here we go.
You're in the union. You got health coverage.
I'm like, this is it. Yeah. Everyone's ready for me. And then got like a couple guest stars and then. And, you know,
that was
it? Like, well, that, I guess I'll waitress now.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, I did. But I took this cold reading class with Chris Parnell, and I met Chris Parnell there, and he's the one who was like, you should audition for the Groundlings. That's what started me kind of in the comedy world. Long story to get to that.
Not really. So you didn't have a lot of traction with the Sweet Valley High.
Renata Vargas didn't really take off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way that. So we all thought she would.
So when you get the Groundlings, now are you living at home?
Mm-mm. I was waitressing. I had an apartment in West LA. And
where were you waitressing?
In Santa Monica.
Yeah.
On Montana Avenue. Wow. I waitressed at the 17th Street Cafe.
I have no idea. Like Santa Monica is like another world to me.
I don't ever go to that area anymore, but I used to live over there.
What part of the town do you live in now?
I live in the Hollywood Hills.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why would you go? To Santa Monica.
And in fact, if there's a meeting or something and it's after 10 or...
Me too.
I mean, if it's before 10 or after 2, I just pass.
No way. Me too. I can't do it. From here? Are you fucking nuts?
By the way, from my house, it's not great either.
I mean, like because a lot of those people, like, I'll actually judge. That's one of those agents, executive business things where it's like, they want me to come in at 4?
Oh.
At 4 o'clock? How unimportant am I that I can't get in the 11 to 3 range?
Well, 3 is already cutting it close. You got to go 11 to 2. If you're like really on their top choices, 11 to 2.
Right. And I'm like, this is not worth
you're
it.
You're like, I'm not 4:15, my friend.
It's clearly not worth it. 4:15 in Culver City.
You have 7 other choices ahead of me. There are already offers out, and you're just waiting they're waiting to read. You're waiting for them to get back to you.
Yeah, yeah. No way. No fucking way. It's nice to be able not to do that.
I know, right?
And they think you're playing hard to get. You're like, I just do not want to sit in traffic for an hour
it's
and a half
beyond.
On both sides of that.
It's beyond. Ugh. I do think there's very few people now over there. I feel like everyone has sort of gotten the clue and have moved over. I feel like very rarely now is it.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah, the offices are here or closer.
I feel like now everything's a little closer.
Right. What was out there? It was like Comedy Central was out there.
Comedy Central was out there.
HBO's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know what? I've been truly under a rock for 2.5 years where
Netflix
I haven't seen the light of the day.
Netflix is like right. It's right by the 101 at Sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've become like a shell of a human being. Like I don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't go anywhere.
No, we just get older and we're doing our job, whatever that job is. Yeah, I mean, and you do.
It's hard to do. It's hard.
You know, you go shoot where you shoot, and then you do the thing.
Yeah.
So who's in the Groundlings when you get there? You just start taking classes.
You got to take classes. It's a whole to do.
No, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I got through it relatively quickly, and then I was in the Sunday Company where I was cut. After a year of being a Sunday Company. But I was there with, in my like sort of group, I was Melissa McCarthy and Ben Falcone, Wendy McClendon, Covey, and Steve Little, and a bunch of other amazing people you don't know. And then Dax Shepard and Caitlin Olson, who
Dax
also
was
cut.
A Groundling?
That's how Dax and I knew each other. And we were both cut. And so was Caitlin Olson from It's Always Sunny, blonde.
Yeah.
Really funny.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine. Cut. We were all cut. And it's actors voting on other actors. It's a crazy system.
So
the
you're
main
out?
Company. So
you never made the main
literally,
company.
Literally, yeah. And then once you're out, it's like you've been in a cult for 5 years and then you're just like sprung back out in the world and you're like, who am I?
Yeah.
What have I, you've beaten me down. Like you're literally like a shell of yourself. And that's when I started doing stand up.
I have a yes and skill set.
That's all I've got. But Groundlings was good because it taught me how to write.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like comedy boot camp. When you do the Sunday Company, you have to write like 5 new sketches every Wednesday.
Yeah.
You have to have them do every Wednesday. And then you put them up on Sunday. And it is comedy boot camp. You can't wait for inspiration.
Yeah.
You can't wait for whatever. You just got to churn that shit out.
Yeah, see, I'm terrible at it. I can't stand writing. I literally go into a nap paralysis.
Yeah.
But people who do it, do you like it?
Yeah. Oh, I do.
See, it's good to like it.
I do. Yeah.
Do you like sitting in a writer's room with a whiteboard going like, oh, and you're on the second column?
We don't, like, you know, my writer's room isn't like a traditional writer's room. We pitch, I pitch a lot of stories. Everyone pitches stories. I hire people really for what their like sort of personality and like the way, you know, they think and what their life is. And
but you're
stories.
Not improvising, mm-mm. are you?
On we the improvise. Show? I improvise a little bit. It depends. If it's me and Mansukis,
yeah,
we're improvising. But no, it's fully scripted. And then we get to this. Yeah, I mean, yeah. even with he, it's like moving the script. Right. No, it's it has. We do like an improv take usually for every scene.
Yeah,
but it's fully scripted.
Yeah,
yeah.
It does. It feels like that.
Yeah,
yeah. So when, like, so you come out of Groundlings, mm-hmm. is that when you decide, like, I'm going to do stand-up?
Yeah, I was like, well, I've got to do something.
So what, and that's 2002-ish?
Yeah, I think that's 2002-ish.
And there's a lot, the alt scene is sort of happening.
The alt scene's
and
happening.
So you can get on stage without having any experience mm-hmm. whatsoever and yeah. be celebrated because you know people?
Well, I don't even know if I knew anyone, but I quickly knew got to know people.
Yeah.
I think being a woman yeah. was... nice. There weren't a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
So you would, people would be like, well, we need that one woman.
So you're
so I got up
at
in
the
places
M-bar.
I shouldn't. M-bar, I improv.
Mm-hmm.
Probably got up faster than I would have other places.
Aukerman show at the M-bar.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that called again?
Oh my God. Comedy Death Ray.
Oh yeah. So important.
By the way, you remember how important it was? It was like, I got to get on that Comedy Death Ray. Yeah.
And then that room, I never liked the M-bar. And then when it moved over to UCB,
yeah.
it was like, it wasn't as important. But when it was at M-bar, it was sort of like a big deal.
It was a big deal. Whenever I got a spot there, I yeah. felt like it was a big deal.
Oh my God, it's so in my, I don't give a shit anymore,
mm-hmm.
Compartment.
Yeah. I think after Groundlings and how crazy that place was,
yeah.
it made stand-up kind of like, well, this is easy.
Yeah.
In that, not easy in that the craft is easy, but easy in like, I'm not being voted on by people. It's all,
yeah.
you can contain it all yourself. I don't need to put a wig on and a weird voice and a thing.
Right.
That actually wasn't my forte.
And what were you doing? Jokes or stories or just you?
Kind of just me and
yeah.
like where I was in my life, but not really storytelling. I mean, jokes. And I think I was able to fake being a stand-up in the beginning
yeah.
enough to be able to not be terrible.
Right.
And then slowly started to be able to actually
right.
be a stand-up
yeah.
as that went away. But yeah, I mean, and it was a great group of people. I started dating Chris Hardwick. So he and I were together through that.
You dated Hardwick?
Those years, yeah.
I probably didn't like you then.
Yeah, you might not have.
Yeah, because I had a problem with him early on.
Oh, okay.
Because he like surfaced in New York first as a stand-up back in the Luna days.
He did?
He did.
But he's always in L.A.
No, this was 2000 and, no, it was the mid-90s.
Mm.
And it was like literally when he just started doing it and I'm like,
got
the
it.
Guy from MTV?
Right.
The host guy? And that stuck on me, like, for me.
But why do you care?
I did care at that time.
Yeah.
I was very protective of
got it.
The idea of stand-up and,
mm-hmm.
and I just didn't buy him.
Okay.
As a stand-up.
Okay.
But then I got out here and it was all Hardwicky. And then
so you were not a fan.
I had to reckon with Hardwick. Yeah,
that's
you know.
So weird. He's like the nicest. Like
I never bought it. I'm like, what? There's a darkness here, and I want it.
Like it's like with the agents. You're like, oh,
well, no, because coming. Like what?
Yeah.
Well, you know what it was is like.
Yeah.
After New York and whatever uh-huh. judgments I had about Chris, then I got out here, and it was before he stopped drinking.
Yeah,
so,
no,
like,
I well, he'll tell you. I. Basically,
you were with him then?
Well, yeah, and I broke up. I was like, you need... I was like,
I saw
we
him
fought at, about it from the beginning, and then when we broke up, he got sober.
Right, because he was doughy and sweaty, and like...
Well, I don't...
No, I mean, not fat, but like, yeah. he didn't look great. And then, like, I saw him at Zach Galifianakis's party mm-hmm. once, and I'm like, dude, you know, I can help, you know, I can steer yeah. you in the right direction, and not long after that, he locked in.
That's, yeah.
And he became like this exercise junkie and this kind of like...
Work.
Right, right. He,
yeah, yeah.
he a brand building maniac. He
yeah.
he just like, he kind of isolated himself and started reading, you know, Seth Godin books or something and became this like
yeah.
thing. Then,
yeah, yeah.
Then the Nerdist evolved.
Yeah.
But you were done with him by then.
Yeah, but we're still good friends. And,
yeah.
But yeah, so I was with, so in that world and then... And then I did this show for Comedy Central called Dog Bites Man.
Oh, yeah.
And I became a writer-producer on that.
That was that
And that
Zach?
Was with Zach
yeah.
and Matt Walsh and
yeah.
A.D. Miles and myself. And we played this, like, news team.
A.D. lives over here.
Yeah.
He trains at the same gym. I see him
oh,
a lot.
Nice.
I'm watching him lose weight. I haven't seen him lately.
By the way, I haven't seen him in, like, a decade. But when he moved back out here after Fallon, we were like, we got to get together. Yeah. And then we didn't. And oh. But I love him. He's awesome. But so it was the four of us.
Maybe you can stop by after this.
Great. Mm-hmm. I'll just knock. Yeah.
What's up?
What's up? Yeah. It's been a decade. How are you?
I was just at Marin's around the corner.
Yeah. By the way, he's the kind of person that like in 30 seconds, it would be like we've seen each other. Like,
No, he's a good guy.
And so that's, so then I.
Dog bites man.
And so, I was doing stand-up, but it's the one thing that I wish I'd done longer. I don't miss sketch. I could never do another sketch for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I'd be thrilled. I still like doing some improv.
Yeah.
But stand-up I really liked, but I just...
But you can do it.
No, I have a child, and I work... I mean...
I understand.
I can't. I can't go out that
See,
much.
Like, you know that about yourself.
Well, I've tried. I literally, a couple years ago, I was like, I'm going to go back out and try to do some stuff. I couldn't go out more than once a week. And if you can only go out once a week, you can't get good.
No, right. You can't.
You got to like, go got, five nights like, a week. I can't work all fucking day and then go. I just can't.
But you have downtime.
I have not had downtime for 2.5 years. This is legitimately the second day that I've had any downtime.
So today?
Mm-hmm.
So
but, since November,
but what happens? Are you picked up already? So you're writing already? Or are you waiting? Or what? How's it work?
We just launched a second season, so right. we're talking.
Oh
yeah, I need a little break.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But don't you have a few months?
I didn't from 1 to 2.
Right.
So we'll see.
Because you're exec, produce, star, and writer.
Mm-hmm. So gotta get that. Gotta get that writer's room staffed and going. And
how many you got?
Small. It's Joey Slayman is my co-showrunner, and she's amazing. And then we had three other writers.
Who?
Krister Johnson, Elizabeth Lame, and Jeff Drake.
Yeah.
And a great writer's assistant, Christy McCann.
And Mandzukas doesn't write or anything?
He writes, but not on my show. Yeah.
Oh.
But he writes in his life.
Right. So going back though, like what happened with, because I was doing my minor amount of research. I mean, you've obviously done a lot of bit things on a lot of different things,
mm-hmm.
but you were actually cast in the pilot of Party Down?
Yeah, I did that right before I did Step Brothers, and then when it got picked up, I was 8 months pregnant when they were going to be shooting.
That's very pregnant.
Very pregnant, and I was playing the love interest, so Lizzie Kaplan took, who's a good friend of mine, and so she ended up doing that role.
And she's on your show.
And she's on my show, yes. All my friends have come and like... stepped up and Adam Scott is on this season.
Yeah, he's a little disturbing. He's probably the most disturbing part of the whole show.
Adam Scott?
In a way.
Of my show?
Well, yeah, because like, I mean, it's not creepy or weird, but it's just weird seeing, I guess maybe.
Because of the role. Scene?
Yeah,
oh, got it.
Yeah.
That's a real story, almost word for word.
The gynecologist mm-hmm. scene?
Yeah.
It's very funny and just very.
Yeah.
I think he did a great job. I love him.
He did a fantastic job.
But the detachment awesome. Is like so
Well, that's
wild.
What was so insane. I was like, are you in, literally you're like elbow deep and like the two of you were just chatting
you
about.
You and your husband knew each other. Yeah. I mean, the gyno and your husband were
went
friends.
Went to camp.
And they realized it in the room?
Yes. Like like it was like, are you, and then he was like, oh my God, how's your sister? And he was like, his sister was my first kiss. And I was like, great. It was so crazy. And then what is not in the show is when I had to go up for a follow-up for what I was there for, I had to go back like 10 days later for a follow-up and my husband was not there.
Yeah.
And it was just me and Dr. Goldberg.
Yeah.
And it was the most uncomfortable, fastest. Both of us were just like, hello, hello. And it was just like, doot, 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 and bye-bye, you're good. Yeah.
Yeah, doctors are weird.
Yeah.
The kind of intimacy that you're not supposed to have.
Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, because I grew up, my dad was a doctor. So So like I'd always go to his friends if I had to get anything checked out. And then you'd see him socially and be like, hey, yeah, we did the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. There's no problems.
No problems.
Yeah.
You've seen things.
They have.
Yeah.
So what are you doing movies? Are you doing another movie now?
No, I legitimately have not been available to do anything. I had a movie come out in last fall called Summer 03, but I shot that literally in the 3 weeks I had off between season one and season two. Shoved that in.
Wow.
And then I literally wrapped post-production on season two 2 weeks ago, and I've just been doing press. And so now I'm like, okay, I need to take a little breath and
well, I'm glad we could do this.
I'm thrilled we could do this. I am a fan of this and I listen to it all the time.
I'm not scary anymore.
No.
I know.
Yeah. I didn't think you would be.
No. I know, not now.
Well, now I know that you hated, well, I think you hated a lot of people.
I don't know if it was hate. I just didn't know why everyone seemed to be having an easier go at it than me.
Got it.
I mean, they weren't necessarily.
No.
And I certainly, you know, made it more difficult.
Yeah.
But my projection was like, it was basically like, that person seems to have their shit together.
Fuck
they can go fuck themselves. Yeah.
That, by the way, that was the vibe I got. It was like, that person seems to hate me for no reason. Yeah. And I don't know what to do with that. Oh. So I'm just not going to really address, I'm just going to not actually talk to them.
It was all insecurity and whatever. You know what I mean? It's so far back. Do you know?
So far back.
But the weird the weird thing was is when I got out here in 2002, you know, I'd already been doing stand-up for years.
Yeah.
And I had to reintegrate, and just getting time on alternative shows was like the most important thing in the world. Uh-huh. And now it's like, I don't want to step foot in a place. And, and that whole, it seems that whole scene has sort of now become just the mic scene in a way, or just
is this. It? I don't even know. I don't even,
but like even when Chris had Nerd Mouth, it's like, I got to go
meltdown.
Fucking, I got to get on those fucking shows.
Yeah.
And
it was so,
And I didn't even love the audiences that much.
Yeah.
They were the most homogenized bunch. The whole alt comedy scene.
I have such good, like, I loved that time. I liked the audiences. I liked doing stand up then.
Well, no,
But I also wasn't like, I'm already established in another city.
Well,
and
no,
now I gotta come here.
But like, as a stand up, I'm like this, I'm a rogue person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this whole sort of like, we're all going. I'm like, I'm not going. If you're all going.
I mean, I don't know why that's not so charming as you think it would be.
What?
And, is just being like, fuck everyone. I'm not going with you if you're all going there.
But it's just like, I just don't know what everyone does. Like, I have one or two good friends, and like, you know, I can sort of sit in a group for a little while.
Well, now we don't have, now it's all about shedding friends.
Right. Well, or just struggling to maintain the couple
and
you have.
Couple that you have and try to see those and get rid of the dead weight.
Yeah. But you go to dinner things and stuff?
I feel like a broken record. I literally am like, do I have friends anymore?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen the ones who've come and done my show.
Right.
And then I see Joey,
right,
like showrunner. And then I see my husband and my daughter. Like, literally.
So you're keeping that relationship
keeping strong. That one going for now. Although, again, I feel like I'm meant to be a divorcee. And people think I'm joking, but I feel like I crush
it. You covered it on my show. Where the detachment comes in. But like, it's just odd because now I'm at this point where it's sort of like, I should be having people over the house. I got a nice house.
Yeah. I just moved as well.
What does it take to cook a dinner for four people? And it's just sort of, it's like, but then like I get to the next phase, it's sort of like, well, what are we really going to do?
By the way, I was about to say, you don't, but of course you don't. I'm like, do you not like a game night?
What?
See, no.
What does that do?
A game
night. Like on your show?
Yeah. Like where your friends come over and you play games.
Like what? Like what games?
Like running charades or, by the way, I don't even know why, of course you don't do this. But there's nothing better than getting like 12 people together and playing games.
Huh.
Play celebrity, famous names in a hat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm all for it. Like, to me, that's the best thing. Drink a couple glasses of wine, play, have a game night, 11 o'clock.
Snacks.
Bye-bye.
You have snacks? Yeah. Snacks?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Okay.
Listen, I'm going to learn guitar.
I'm going to have a game night.
We're going to do Decaloris. You do a game night.
and
what do you do?
Catch back.
What is it that you do that I need to? So I have game nights and have fun.
Oh, what is it that I
do? So I'll sit alone in a closet? What do I do?
Not a closet.
Okay.
How are you at cooking?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Haven't done a lot of it recently, but I enjoy cooking. Pretty good.
I've been doing that.
What do you cook?
I'm going to cook this weekend.
Do you eat everything or you don't eat stuff?
No, I do, but okay. I haven't been eating dairy really.
Okay.
But I cook fish. I'm good at fish. I'm good at, I can cook.
Great.
I can look at a recipe and do it.
I think a man that can cook is a very nice.
Like, I think the trick is if you can look at a recipe and see what's supposed to happen, you got a good shot at it. If you're just sort of like, and then, you know, if you're just in the moment with it, then you don't. Yeah.
You see it as a bigger picture.
Yeah, I've been improvising a little bit with the cooking.
So you improvise in the kitchen?
A little bit, yeah. And I've been, I listen to records.
Yes, okay.
on vinyl.
I could sit in a room and listen to records.
I do that. I've been reading some books lately, trying to read a little more.
I read.
I like to, I hike.
Okay.
Like I hike up the mountain.
I can do a lot of these things.
All right, we'll do some of those, and I'll try to have a game night.
You have a game night. Honestly.
Why don't you just invite me to your game night?
I was going to say, please invite me to your game night.
But this, I don't even know, like.
I'll help you.
Like, I'm going to have Dave Anthony over for game night.
Oh
do you know
God,
him?
God, that's a name I haven't thought. Yeah, yeah. A million years ago.
Cranky Dave.
I don't even know him well enough. He was sort of above me. You know what I mean? Yeah, so I was like, I knew who he was.
Yeah, but, yeah. He was on my show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so homework.
So we have homework.
And the show's great.
Thank you.
And I'm glad we got everything covered.
Yeah, I'm glad that we worked it all out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right? That was fun, right? I think it was great. I like the show. I think she's hilarious. Solid person, that Andrea Savage. Solid individual. Don't forget to send us questions for the 1,000th episode. Tell us what you want to know about the last 10 years of WTF. Send your questions to WTFpod@gmail.com and put 1,000th episode question in the subject line. But also, you know, if you want, you got something to say, this might be the time. Okay? I'm going to play a little guitar. A little send-off to a friend who was not in the military, but was no less a trooper, for sure. Comedy trooper. Godspeed, Brody Stevens. Rest in peace, man. Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me. A tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.